Okay, let's test it. And now stop. Yep, that is we want. Stop.
Now 7 o'clock, I'll be calling the Planning Commission meeting for November 24th to order. The first order of business is to pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First of two public comment sections for the night. Anyone wanted to speak anything that's not on our agenda tonight can come forward at this time. You're limited to 3 minutes. You would come forward, state your name and your address, please. See, no one looking to come forward. We'll move on to approval of minutes. Ms. Eager has made a motion to accept the minutes as presented. Do I have a second?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Gaines has seconded. All in favor say aye. Chair votes aye, 5-0.
Put me down as abstaining.
Okay. Mr. Silver, abstaining, 4-0-1. Okay, the first item that we actually have on the agenda tonight is a subdivision, SUB 1420, Savannah County Habitat for Humanity.
Mr. Chairman, before we get started on this, I just want to tell you that I have represented the landowner in this case on other matters, not having to do anything to do with the subdivision. I have not represented for probably 10 years. I don't think I have any conflict, but I wanted to tell you all that. So we know that if you have a problem with it, I'll go ahead and elucidate further.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, this is item SUB 1420. It is a request for a major rural cluster subdivision in the Hazel zoning district. This site is 64.154 acres. It's tax map 18, section A, parcel 46. And the request is for 27 rural cluster lots. Development area would be 12.15 acres. And one street that would be 3.85 acres of right-of-way and 48.11 acres of open space, or 75% of the development. Overall density is 0.421 dwelling units per acre. And again, it is zoned A1. Rural cluster subdivision is a by-right use in the A1 district. It's actually a requirement for 6 lots or greater. There's some site history here. There's a boundary line adjustment that was approved in 2004. And a physical survey in 2005. This is an aerial photograph. You see it's outlined, the southern parcel is outlined in bold. It's approximately 1,800 feet south of the Slice Gate, access to Lake Monticello. Zoning map, you can see the subject property again, identified in green, bold. Boundaries, zoned A1, and also surrounding properties are zoned A1. A few site pictures for the commission. This is the entrance locations. It's looking south along South Boston Road, about 600. Another photo looking north. And then again, the main entrance site is currently mostly wooded. The applicant's yield plan. Referring to the subdivision is Houchin's Place. And then also the cluster sketch plan. It shows the delineation of the development lots as well as the open space area. Comprehensive plan analysis. The plan states that the Wabanaki community planning area should be a mixture of uses and residential dwelling types to serve a variety of incomes. Neighborhood mixed use to support a variety of. Additionally, this area is made up of commercial neighborhood streets along with rural roads, trails, paths, and sidewalks are encouraged for safe and convenient pedestrian access. Finally, a comprehensive plan states residential density is up to 6 dwelling units per acre depending on the zoning district. Within the Robin CPA, property is zoned A1, therefore the rural cluster subdivision is required for 6 lots or greater, which is what this is. Incidentally, this is in the right-hand community planning area. In conclusion, this development appears to meet the requirements of the subdivision ordinance and zoning ordinance. Also for density and open space requirements, it's satisfied. And also appears to meet the intention of a comprehensive plan. The rural cluster development within the Robin CPA proposed for its concept of mixed use. This is a Habitat for Humanity development. And Mr. Himes, the applicant is here, can elaborate more on that for you in just a minute. And open space has been preserved as contiguous parcel as the cluster section requires in the A1 district. This development would be served by individual well and septic systems. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the commission may have. You, Mr. Hyde, Mr. Himes is here.
Only concerns I had was to make sure that all of the items that were talked about by VDOT, the fire department, and the Division of Forestry were complied with.
Yes, sir.
That was my main concern.
Yes, sir. Commission, go ahead. Okay, this is tonight. Now, I'm going to submit a preliminary plat. The planning office will distribute the preliminary plat to all agencies just mentioned and provide comments. Staff will return those to the applicants. So we work with them to cross those T's and dot those I's between the preliminary and final plat review of the process.
The applicant would like to tell them.
Just in general.
Good evening. I'm Mike Hines, president of Cabana County Habitat and Humanity. I've been before this planning commission as a local developer many times, but I've never been as excited about the project as I am about Hodgson's Place. This is an incredible project for Cabana Habitat and Humanity. This is, quite frankly, if approved, is going to allow us to write a new chapter, and if I may take a few minutes and tell you why it is so important to us. Most of you probably know that Habitat is a worldwide home building mission. It's a Christian organization. They just passed the 1 million mark of homes built worldwide. Locally, every Habitat is county-wide. Each county does its own thing according to the demographics of its individual areas. So if Louisiana does its own thing, we aren't part of Charlottesville or any of the other surrounding counties. So it allows us to deal with the unique issues that are a part of Louisiana County. When I joined the board 9 years ago, we were buying the least expensive lots we could throughout the county to put our Habitat houses on, and some locations weren't quite as good as the others. And it made us realize that maybe there was a better way to do what we're doing. And so actually at my first board meeting, Jay Cronister, who was our site selection committee chairman, said, wow, we found 12 acres on Mountain Hill Road. Mike, what can you do with it? And so High Mountain Acres was the product of that. It was a minor rural cluster subdivision down by Fort Union. We built 4 Habitat homes there and sold the 5th on the open market. The reserve area on the open market. Quite by accident, one of our homeowners created a community support system. We hadn't even thought about it. We were just looking for cheap lots altogether. And we realized the strength of what we were doing in the county community. And so we looked for another piece of property, and we're fortunate enough to find 15 acres on Route 15, just north of Palmetto, right across from the fire station. This has become our Cedar Ridge project. It is also a 5-lot minor cluster subdivision. We are nearing completion in our 4th home there, and with our spring build, we will reach build out in the community. With that, I've been looking for a parcel of land for about a year and a half for our next project, and decided that we need to look larger than we're doing. There were some restrictions to the minor cluster subdivision. We didn't really like the private road, and sat with our homeowners with having to take care of a road, so we were looking for something that we would put a state road in. And so I found the Houses property one day, knowing Oscar Houses for 30 years, and with one phone call realized that this was a great potential for Habitat. And so over the course of several months, I put together the plans that you see before you for our next community. We had the unfortunate circumstance to foreclose on our house a number of years ago, and it was an eye-opener that we made the strategic decision at the board level to flip the house so we had a strategic reserve in our bank account. And in the process of doing that, I realized that the house was not extremely energy efficient. In fact, quite the opposite. And so at the same time, we ran into the EarthCraft certification program. We realized that this was exactly what we were looking for quality control in our construction process. And so we embraced it wholeheartedly, and all of the homes that we had built in High Mountain Acres and Cedar Ridge have been EarthCraft certified. The first home that we built, we sweated the 10-page inspection, but we did get certified and received a HERS rating of 78. And a HERS rating compares your house to what is normally built. A normal house is 100. A house that uses no energy or produces as much energy as it uses is 0. So 78 was pretty good. With the house that we're just finishing, we are expecting in the low 60s. This translates to a greatly reduced utility bill for our apartment families. they are averaging between $80 and $85 a month, which is really helping with the affordability of their mortgages. With the real estate meltdown that we all went through, we realized that building one house a year, which we've been doing for about 10 years, wasn't even scratching the surface, and so we needed to ramp up our efforts. And in order to do that, we needed to find some financing. That in the past, we had been fundraising and fundraising and fundraising to build a house, and so that really limited the amount of houses that we could build. We ran into the USDA 502 Rural Mortgage Program for another habitat and realized it was a great fit. All of the homes that are in Cedar Ridge will be financed through this program. The strength of this program is that closing, we get all of our funds back from the construction of the house, the land and area, which allows us to roll right into another project. This has been a game changer for us. And so with that, we have restructured our organization to take advantage of that. We get out in the middle of that process, we've been going on for 3 years now. We have put a new family selection process in place. It's a two-step process. We used to pick the best applicant and hope for the best and put them in the house. Now we have a much more stringent program they have to go through. That there's an application process. Once we determine that they qualify for our program through their income and their housing requirements, they go into a pool. The first thing that that pool has to do is go through the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University class. So we teach them how to budget. When they come out of this program, they have a budget. We have counselors that work with them to make sure that they are living within their budget, so they can afford the house that we're going to put them in. The other side of that is that they will be working on improving their credit score. That the USDA program requires a 640 credit score. Most of our applicants have way less than that, so we work with them sometimes years to get them up to the 640. But once they actually reach that point, then they qualify for a house and go through the application process to the USDA and get in line for a house and put in their sweat equity. That we require 150 hours of sweat equity for each adult family member. Part of what we realized with this educational process was that we had an opportunity to prepare the people and work early with the homes. And so right now we are in the middle of changing our educational program that half of our sweat equity is going to be in education. We are hoping not only to produce good homeowners, but to make them more prepared to deal with life. And so we are very excited about this opportunity. So we have a lot of initiatives that we have been working on. Houchin's Place is going to be the proving ground for all the things that we're working on. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to us. It's going to give us the opportunity to fine-tune our process and to be able to do more in battling the affordable housing crisis in our county. So I humbly ask you to approve Houchin's Place. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for the applicant? I will divulge one thing here, too, while we're paying to vote something. This Mr. Houchin is, okay. Mr. Houchin is probably a distant cousin of mine, but I probably wouldn't know him if I saw him set up because my family is part of the Houchin family, so probably my great grandfather was a Houchin.
Okay.
And
that's
not I just want to make sure that anybody questions
it. Absolutely perfect to say that, but in my opinion, that's not.
Okay, it's my turn then. About maybe 7 or 8 months ago, I was contacted by Mr. Ames, who's in the audience now, to document the process, video document the process of one particular family going into the Cedar project. That project
sell them so that we will have more diversity in our community, and that's how we're going to pay for the land as well. That gives 19 lots, which should be about 6 acres of lot.
I just wanted to refer to what Gary talked about earlier, the conditions that the staff suggests. It was an 18-foot road, and 90-foot diameter as a cul-de-sac, but the fire department asked for a 22-foot road.
Yes, when we read through the fire department's request, that this is a rural road, and we will be building extensive berms to meet UDOT standards, and they feel 18 foot is sufficient for the density of the project. And so they would be trying to improve the design of the road, so we would be able to take 10 foot over this size of the road. And I thought that the input by the fire department was very insightful, that going back through there, realized that it has the potential to be a catastrophic fire event should we don't clear it out. So we're going to make provisions to clear around the section of houses in that area on a PD basis.
And one of the other people is, my question was the plan, the equipment plan, and figure out how many lots you can have. I think it was lot 16. Did you get a house on it?
I can miss myself. It was a 50 by 50 building on a low range spot when I designed it.
Okay, this is the proposed rural cluster. Where you did the map?
The yoke map?
Yeah, the yoke map. Sorry. Could you take a look at the lot 16? I'm not sure. Is the buildable area above? Can you go back to the other one? Is this the buildable area?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you get a house in there?
50 by 50 was the building envelope, and that was the same 50 by 50.
Okay. Maybe my ruler was off.
As you said, this is this edition of the capital improvement plan for fiscal years 2016 through 2020. The proposed capital improvements plan, or CIP, for 2016 through 2020 includes 24 projects submitted by several county departments. The Planning Commission has identified 8 of the requested projects as priorities for fiscal year 2016. The total cost of the proposed projects is $22,960,504, of which $3,292,000 $8 is proposed for fiscal year 2016. Cash will pay for most of the total cost of these projects and will be supplemented through grants, borrowing, and other sources. The proposed capital improvements projects identified as priorities for fiscal year 2016 are for information technology, the county and sheriff's new phone system, for parks and recreation, Pleasant Grove multipurpose structure, also known as the Farmers Market, and Pleasant Grove Heritage Museum. For the sheriff's department, the evidentiary camera project. For E911 services, the new server consolidation and disaster recovery project. For fire and rescue, personal protective equipment replacement, and wireless link upgrade project. And for schools, the computer, instructional technology, and infrastructure replacement. You have the sheet in front of you with the projects and the proposed amounts, and the motion is on the screen. I would just like to thank the finance department, especially Mariana and Eric, for their hard work and participation throughout the process.
Do we have any other questions for anyone about this? Or do we just want to discuss it? Everybody seems to have any questions. I will put out something that we talked about at the work session that everybody else disagreed with, but I will still bring it out. I thought that the computer technology should go into regular budget and not into DIP. There's lots of reasons for that. Reading the text that was applied with this project, part of this is instructions. Part of it's not, part of it is, and so forth like that. Most counties, including ours, I think, this would be non-reoccurring items. In most counties, it also includes, which ours does too, over $20,000, but stuff lasting at least 10 years. Some people said, well, school buses, two fourths, and I said, well, that's sort of a little bit different, although in the past we have said also that we thought school buses should be in the regular budget. Some counties do it one way, some counties do it another way. I just wanted to, you know, everybody to know that I still feel that I'm going to vote to approve this because I think it's needed. But I do have questions about why they didn't plan for this, because it says right in the narrative with that package that they didn't plan for this and so forth. And it does say right in the narrative that part of this is instructional. My question is, if it's instructional, would books, paper, pencils, and things like that, should that be in the CIP? Although I'm going to vote to approve that or recommend that, I do have that question in my mind. I still have it in my mind. I've gone to other counties to look at what they've done and so forth like that. So, although a lot of technology is something they use in the CIP, but there's classifications and stuff like that.
Is there a lot of some kind of commission been on for a long time, and I remember
decided, we intend to make this an issue with the board of supervisors to resolve this, because truly there's an outstanding question about school buses, instructional material when it comes to technology. You know, big main servers that are, you know, $50,000 or something, you price once every 6 or 8 years, you can store them. But we want to at least make an issue for discussion for the supervisors, and I think also the same concerns, and we'll also decide whether or not we're researching to find out whether the school systems do it, and it'll be the same discussion there.
Because I like on school buses, I know up on counties, was talking about changes, that theirs was in their regular budget, school budget, and they were talking about moving it to the CMT. So, I tried to look at a lot of different counties. So.
Because I think, you know, people who have children and then they have a family, they look at these things before they go to the county, and it's important for them to leave their home and place their kids in the best service that you need. So, would it be better, do you think, if we took this out and let the board back in, or just leave it as is?
I don't think it matters. I mean, it's going to get significant discussion by the board of supervisors because it's a brand new item. And because it's going to get significant discussion, there will be discussion on other issues as you raised tonight about school buses and things, and whether or not it's included in the baseline cost of per pupil expenditures for a locality. So I really don't think from a board of supervisors perspective, it matters whether you approve it and to leave it in, approve it to not put it in. I would suggest that you, whatever you do, you add to the planning department a note to the board of supervisors outlining your concerns. And that would go then exclusively to all five board members. But I don't think it matters whether you approve, vote to leave it here, or vote to take it out. Really, just put your concern about where it is.
I think we should leave it, but have them put a note about the concerns. I know that a lot of y'all disagree with me on that fact, but I went ahead and read that over again. It looks like parts of it are technology, like he talked about, big servers, but some of it is computers and stuff like that. I mean, which computers can replace paper and pencil, and it also can replace reference materials and so forth like that. We're talking about, we've only got 5 years listed on the total thing. Really, we're concentrated on the 1 year, but they're talking about 9.8 years to get this up to standards, and then continually every year, because something has to be replaced every 5 years. So.
Is there any reason that you know why the school would want to do this way? If they request this, I mean, the school board wants this, but just as an example.
At the school board meeting, the discussion was such that they want increased visibility on a technology need for schools. It is a big part of school instructional time now, having the technology focus of our schools. And the school board specifically, and I talked about $300,000 to $600,000 needing a wedge to, as an ongoing basis, replace technology in the school system. The proposal put forward was to put it on the CIP to raise the visibility of it. And frankly, I'm all for that. And it actually fences that, so it has to be spent for that purpose. But it is a really good point on how per pupil expenditures are calculated in the system. In the state system across school divisions. And I just don't know the answer to that yet. So again, if you whether you approve it or you don't, the board is still going to consider the same kind of due diligence you all have to begin with. But I would certainly put your concern forward about, does this account for appropriate pupil expenditures, and is this the right place for an ongoing need, or should it be in the operational budget of the school system? I would just put those points forward, and then the board is going to have the same discussion. I just don't know the answer to that. It's really too new to us. This just came up it's either 2 or 3 school board meetings ago. 3 meetings ago, what came up. And it's we'll have to talk to the school board this year. I mean, I heard the discussion that night. I understood what they were saying, but the rationale, the full rationale behind what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it, I'm not sure. It really came from a staff discussion, I think, because the staff, Mrs. Keller, Mr. Winkler, and Mr. Breslauer, and their IT director, Mr. Gifford, talked about it and then presented to the school board. So I don't know if there was an advanced discussion to the school board, but the school board was all for it that night. My concern is not whether or not it's in this part of the CIP, it's what is it offsetting the operational budget that stays in the CIP. Because they've been spending some technology money. They've been buying some technology things, okay? Well, if we're gonna put $600 as a wedge in the CIP every year, how much is their operational budget reduced?
They'd be happy.
Well, that would be a significant discussion during budget season this year, I can assure you.
And Barry, I'll tell you, I did a little research on my own too, and I'm kind of swimming around to your opinion on this thing. More and more I look at how this is, what the practice is, how good practices are for the CIP and stuff. More and more it looks like something that's recurring, basically in perpetuity here. And a lot of what it's being spent on is, as you say, very, it's hard to say that it's infrastructure. It's hard to say that it's a true capital. I'm coming around to probably belong to the operational budget, but I'm not really for changing this today because it's probably more trouble than it's worth at this point.
Well, I would recommend that we go ahead and do it for this year because we're going to have just coming out over the years, and I think that the planning department and administration should present it to the board of supervisors about what we have said about it. Because if you look at the text on the back sheet of this, it talks about instructional, it talks about computers replaced every 3 or 4 years, other things replaced every so often. And this project alone would take 9.38 years, but yet if you look at the rest of the stuff, a lot of the stuff needs to be replaced every 5 years. So this almost appears to be a recurring item.
Their intention is to have this on in perpetuity every year as a wedge. And again, I'm not making a value judgment whether that's good or bad. That's just what the intention is to put a $600,000, maybe increasing wedge, but a wedge on the CIP. And if the majority of the planning commission is not in support of having this in capital expenditure, that you'd rather see it in the operational budget, there's not going to be any problem at all if the majority decide not to approve that tonight and the CIP approved as proposed with the following exception, that the $600,000 technology item for the schools should be removed from the CIP and moved to the school's operating budget. If that goes forward as a recommendation to the board of supervisors, it's going to breed the same discussion as if you left it in there. But it's maybe a little stronger. If you all collectively recommend that it should be an operational item, I think you should say that. But in any case, if you leave it in, I think you should raise your concerns formally so that it goes to the board of supervisors.
Well, I would like us to have a discussion and maybe think a little bit as to whether we should leave this in the CIP or move it over to the back of the school board.
I would like for us to approve or recommend everything with the exception of this item, with a narrative of our concerns, that we're in favor of the computer technology or so forth, but we think that should be in their budget, and it's a discussion that the board of supervisors should have with the schools. That's my suggestion.
And some of our reasoning that's recurring is perpetuity. I'm not sure if we were actually using this CIP to calculate proffers, which we don't really right now, but we can do that in the future. I'm not sure that part of it couldn't be successfully challenged by somebody to say that that's not an appropriate CIP item, and therefore we shouldn't calculate proffers based on it. So I think there's some issues with it staying in.
Well,
trying to tell why you moved to that. Don't recommend it.
Anybody else have any concerns or think different or
planning staff will write the comments from tonight, and we'll have that formally. We were just talking at the sidebar here. I think one of the things we really need is the very clear definitions of propers and what propers can be used for and what they're intended for, because that may affect the ability to use. I mean, if a developer comes in and says, you know, well, yeah, that money's only buying, you know, 300 laptops this year. You know, propers aren't for laptops. Supposed to increase capacity according to Mr. Wall, but they have some other specifications. So we will put together your comments on your the discussion comments on that and the proper guidance based on what state code and state guidance says in our local ordinances and present them all to the board. And I will encourage the board to contact the event members.
Are we all in agreement with that at this stage? And if so, do we have anybody that would, do we have any other discussion about any other items that we have here? If not, do we have somebody that wants to make a motion about this? Actually, I recognize should technically open up a public hearing at this time, but I don't see any public in the audience, so I am opening up the public hearing at this time. If anybody would like to come forward to say anything about this, please come forward at this time. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll move on to see if there's a motion. Anyone like to make a motion?
So we can do the proper way to exclude the computer instructional technology and instructional replacement.
My suggestion would be that you deal with that first and say if you want to exclude it, take a vote on that, and then the next motion will be to approve the plan as revised.
Plan
next item is unfinished business. I'm going to talk a little bit about the comprehensive plan review and discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a provided a very brief discussion of the comprehensive plan. There has not been very many developments since we spoke last. We're still awaiting the chapter comments from schools and from public safety, so there's nothing to report for either of those departments as of yet. The one primary change that I've made to the goals and objectives was based on your recommendations from the work session, which was to remove the requirement for subdivisions with density of less than one unit per 5 acres. And that was in the second chapter, which is the purple one, land use and community design, and it is the very first small lowercase letter A. So that's under the goal and objective, and it was one of the sub-strategies. Are you clear on the part I'm talking about? And it's kind of hard to describe, but it's all... On the very top of the fourth page, where it says to enable well-planned, coordinated, and sustainable development to occur throughout the county, including the objective of developing new zoning, and directly under that, in the small square in lowercase a, it was the measures such as subdivisions with density of less than one unit per 5 acres. The commission expressed that they wanted to get rid of that last time, and so we've done that. Yeah, that's correct. I'm going to keep going.
Was that on the new sheet you gave us on
the day? It should be, I believe, gone on a new sheet.
Okay.
Yeah, I removed it on a new sheet. And so that was the primary change that I made. However, I've given you all new sheets with a number of things highlighted. Those are recommendations that seem like they're either redundant with something elsewhere in the recommendations, or something that perhaps is not implementable. For example, some of the railroad measures that were in there, I know we've discussed possibly not being implementable. So yellow highlight is just to bring them to your attention as either being redundant or possibly not implementable. Wherever you see green highlighting, that is language that I've added. And those are, I believe, very minor, but they are there. For example, in housing, I changed some of the language to, as we discussed at the work session, to include residences above storefronts, for example. So something like that would be in green, so that I added it. The other potential changes, as I mentioned, are all in yellow highlight, and those are things that appear to be mentioned in more than one place, or just simply something that isn't appropriate for the comprehensive plan, or something that we're just doing by our very nature and doesn't need to be in there. So those are all, we can go through those if you wish, or you can take time to look at those.
Just so that I can write this down.
Sure.
The different highlight, the green highlight is?
That's language that I've added. To either make it more clear to add one of the objectives we talked about, for example, the residences above storefronts that we discussed.
The yellow?
And the yellow, yes, that's either, those are things that likely need to be taken out either because they're redundant or because they're not implementable in the traditional sense of a comprehensive plan.
Discuss these items at the for a work session.
just as a note, I'm happy to take, well, obviously, if it's your pleasure, what you wanted to do, I'm happy to take any changes that you've thought of since we last met today and work on them in the interim. As far as what you wish to discuss, that's a good question.
What else do you want for that particular work session?
It would be fantastic if we could
have the rezoning discussion for the lumberyard.
Just a work session discussion, not public hearing.
Not public hearing, just a work session. So,
but we've only had like 12 days since our regular meeting, and myself, I've had a lot of stuff going on. I haven't had a chance to review this because one of the things I wanted to do was take the new financial sustainability chapter and compare it with the other one line by line and stuff like that, and some of these other things. Now, if we got anybody that has anything that they want to talk to him about or we want to talk about tonight, feel free to do that.
I did too. I took the same meeting you gave us last time.
Yeah.
I went through it and I had about 75 suggestions. Most of them things to get rid of that I didn't think we were really kind of strategic in nature or really effective or didn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
So we really can't talk about it tonight. So I don't know if Jimmy wants to share that or just take that and see what other people
have
say.
Have you given that information?
I did.
He did.
If you're interested in hearing what he suggested, I'd be happy to go through the list. Or if not, then I can maybe combine them with the changes that I've made. Or again, it's at your pleasure. I'd be happy to go through them now or send them to you all.
It's a lot. It's up to you whether you want to do it tonight. It's a lot of suggestions. Again, just my thoughts.
Maybe.
Absolutely. I can scan that and email it to everyone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Would you do that? And
sure.
Then we could really have some more in-depth. Because if you put out 75 things to us right now, it's going to be hard for us to comprehend, that much stuff. That's, I think maybe we could come back at our work session and so forth like that. But I think you've done a real good job of getting some of these goals out of the comp plan that some of them have already been accomplished too. So some of the things that the planning you've noticed, there's nothing the way that planning can do anything about. Does anyone have any other questions for Jay? Do you disagree with what I said about having said this? That and then discuss it at the work session.
That's another good idea.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any new business? That's our last session of public comment. Seeing no public in the audience coming forward, we can dispense with the last public comment. And if there's no objection, I will adjourn here at 7:53. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I thought y'all said it was next Tuesday.
That's the BZA.
Okay.
BZA.
BZA is the second. Tuesday the second. It's better be PM. Then more sure to be. You won't be there.
I was thinking that.
Steve, is that over there? More sure.
The BZA is in more sure.
Tuesday the second.
We'll probably discuss the rezoning and the variance.
Well, we can. It's scheduled for you guys at your regular January meeting.
What's that?
The rezoning. We can certainly have it on the January work session.
We can have it. We can discuss this one as well.
Which rezoning?